It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes. Brian Noonan in for Road today. Be listening at 4:45 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Billy Joel at Wrigley Field on August 11th. Oh my. Billy Joel, the first artist to play Wrigley Field 4 years in a row, selling out the prior three consecutive years. Tickets went on sale today at 10 o'clock via Cubs.com/Billy Joel. You tried to get some, didn't you, Anna? Did you have any luck?
I tried today. I got into the virtual waiting room and then got kicked out for reasons that, maybe it was my own tech skills. I'm not sure. I just somehow was not entering the right code or something. And it was, and I had the best seats right there in front of
and
me.
And it still kicked you
credit
out?
Credit card was on in, yes. And then
that happened to me with Hamilton tickets. I miss the days when you would go and sleep out for tickets.
See,
that's how it should be. If
I don't
you really
miss those
want to
days,
see somebody,
but,
you don't.
But somehow it was simpler.
It was much simpler.
It was a simpler time.
And they never kicked you out of line, did they?
No.
Once you
I've
were there,
heard
you
that
stayed
happening.
There. Nope.
But that's what happened. So
well, I'm
good
sorry.
Luck if you. I mean, congrats if you got them.
Yeah.
Let's talk about an important story in the news. An important story for Chicago today. The Department of Justice released a report. A scathing report, I think you could call it. I think that's fair to say about the Chicago Police Department. And it's talking about some major reforms that need to be made for this department. We want to talk. Our guest right now is Lori Lightfoot. She is a former federal prosecutor, chair of the mayor's police accountability task force, and someone critical for pushing reforms moving forward. Lori, I know you had your board, the accountability task force, rather, had put together your own list of reforms, and I noticed there were some similarities with what the Justice Department has suggested. Are you do you support most of the findings?
Or yeah, the findings are not a surprise. They do in many ways mirror the things that we found and saw through the work of the task force. Of course, the Department of Justice goes broader and deeper on use of force issues, but there's no real surprises that I saw. And, of course, the recommendations, not surprisingly, are similar in content to those that the Police Accountability Task Force recommended. So I think there's some really important things there. The fact is that this document, obviously, is coming from the Department of Justice. There's a contract that's now been signed between the mayor and the department and a commitment to moving forward, which I think is really important. But as much as this, the report itself is very sobering, in the findings, I really think that it does provide an incredible opportunity for the department to strengthen itself, to provide the needed support and resources that officers have been asking for, that they desperately need. So, and I think there's a recognition, of course, that the departments and individual officers can never be successful if they don't have a true, successful, and constitutional relationship with communities that they serve, and I'll add, particularly communities of color. So while it's a sobering report, I think it gives a very clear roadmap to change, and I and a lot of people who have been working on these issues are very committed to moving forward to the next stage and moving forward in a positive way for a solution.
Lori, you mentioned that none of the findings were really a surprise, and most people would agree with you on that. We kind of knew what was coming, and you having done your reports and make your recommendations. It seems sad in a lot of ways that it takes a federal investigation and your investigation to finally make a police department do what we all knew they needed to do for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's true, and we can't change the history in the rearview mirror, but we have an opportunity starting today and moving forward to chart a completely different course for the police department. The police department is one of the most important institutions in our community. The work that the men and women of the police department do every day is courageous work, and the vast majority of them do their job the right way. But we need to give them the skills so they can be best in class, so the Chicago Police Department leads the nation instead of being a poster child for what's wrong and the challenges of policing. We can get there. The tools are there. The energy and talent is there within the department. The energy and talent is here within this great city. We just need to focus, we need to have leadership, and we need to move forward.
Lori, the Justice Department, one of its rulings was that the Chicago Police Department exhibited a pattern or practice of excessive use of force. The Laquan McDonald incident was pretty much a tipping point, I think you could say. in our community in terms of reevaluating what's happening with our police force. And I think a lot of people looked at that video and said, well, why was this warranted? And a lot of questions and conversations happened around that. Now we've come out to find that some of the training videos are, what, 20 years old, mm-hmm. that describe how you use force. And when questioned, according to the Justice Department, it's kind of shocking to me, one in six officers couldn't actually verbalize what the actual legal standard is for use of force. All that needs to be improved. It seems like the training is a big move, a big part of what were the suggestions in terms of how to answer what's going wrong.
That's right. Training. It really all starts with training. It starts with training of the young recruits. It starts with really having a professionalized academy with certified trainers, coming up with a strategic plan for training so that we're not just doing episodic reactive training. We really need to have annualized training that really covers the range of challenges that the officers face. The training academy should be first answer veteran officers. But if you're not investing in your most important asset, which for the police department it is people, then you have lost your way. And unfortunately, that's where we are right now. But again, there is a tremendous opportunity to change the course, to really make significant improvements. And you're going to see that when you make those investments, you're going to see it every day in the way that officers start to interact with members of the public. But it really, training is so important. It should not be that an officer, as he leaves the academy, spend the next 25 or 30 years of his career with no mandatory annual training in firearms qualifications. And that's where we are right now. That is a shameful lack of trust in the police department, and actually in the community, because it shows the way that officers
Well, Laura, you're committed. The mayor has said he's committed. Superintendent Johnson has said he's committed. Everybody's committed to the training and these programs. But the big question that everybody who lives in Chicago and Illinois always comes up with when there's training programs mentioned, where are we going to get the money for this? And if we don't have the money, has the department looked into ways to take what they already have and still institute some of these programs? Because we can't go on the way we are with officers being rapidly trained in tasers, not knowing how to use them. As Anna said, watching a two-decade-old video, how are we going to implement this? Where do we go to actually nuts and bolts get this stuff moving?
Well, one, I think we have to have a strategic plan that's thoughtful, that is responsive to the realities of the job that police officers face, which is very different now than it was even 10 years ago. We have to think about what are the technological schools that are available that can enhance the way officers do their job, and we need to make sure that we train for that. If there's a new policy directive, for example, during the McCarthy years, the mandate was stop and frisk, get contact cards. But there was no training around that, and then what we saw was way too much unconstitutional policing. So we need to be a lot more thoughtful about making sure that we marry up the training with the realities of the job. And then once we do that, we have to cost it out and figure out how much the components are going to cost. Look, we are spending $20 to $30 to $40 million every single year, and that doesn't count the blockbuster cases. It's just a routine spend on settlements and judgments related to police misconduct. Mm-hmm. Just imagine if we took a fraction of that money and reinvested it in the police department, in the training, and all the other tools that the Department of Justice has recognized are essential to policing that we don't have in place here. Money is there. We just have to be smarter about how we spend it.
Fair argument. I want to also ask you, Lori, about the rank and file, because I know you've personally spent time with them, interviewed them, and are aware of their concerns, because I think there is an argument to be made that all this new age of scrutiny, the new rules, have had a negative effect on them, and they feel as if their hands are tied, or there's this thing called the Ferguson effect, where 72% of cops say they're afraid to make an arrest, afraid to do anything. You've seen the number of stops dramatically down here in Chicago, dramatically down. You wonder what kind of a chilling effect all these new rules and regulations have on them, and how do you handle that piece of the equation?
Well, let me challenge a couple of your assumptions. One is the notion that you can't marry up constitutional policing reform with proactive policing. I don't believe that. I don't think that anybody who is a real expert of local policing believes that.
I don't believe it either, but what we're seeing since the ACLU made the paperwork rules, this number of stops have gone down dramatically. We can't.
Well, the query whether or not those stops were constitutional in the first place. And what we do know, too, which is the other side of this coin, is that last year the Chicago Police Department, I think, took off the street 8,000 illegal guns, again, double New York and L.A. Mm-hmm. combined. You're not taking illegal guns off the street if you're sitting on your hands and you're doing nothing. No, there's no question that morale is challenged. There's no question that some officers are reluctant to engage in proactive policing because they don't want to be that guy or that gal that's on the video that goes viral on social media. But all the more reason why we need training, we need better supervision, and we need leadership. We need the leadership of the police department to articulate to those young officers in particular and the veteran officers who have those fears what the path forward is, that they're going to be given actual support and resources. They're going to be supported if they make a mistake as opposed to intentional misconduct. But fundamentally, that they're going to also, that the community has to take steps, of course, in the direction of the police department because it is an important relationship.
No question.
None of these things are going to happen overnight. But we gotta talk that narrative and not the narrative of, oh, police are afraid, they're laying back, they're not going engaging in proactive policing. Because what that narrative is justifying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think we've lost. Her. Brian, we're gonna put Lori on hold. See if she's still there. Lori Lightfoot, of course, is whether she's the police board president. It all comes back to consistency of message, I think, because one of the things that came out in the DOJ report mm-hmm. was that discipline is haphazard. It's unpredictable. It does nothing to deter misconduct. The line officers have no idea what's really going on. I mean, as opposed in regard to discipline.
Right. Discipline's either dismissed it's
some guys
2%
of
complaints actually.
Some feet are held
punishment.
To the fire, some are not. So if you're out on the street and you're not sure, okay, where does the department fall on this?
A firm set of rules.
Right.
Would
you can't
help
make an informed decision.
This is structure.
I think we have her back. Lori, are you there?
I am here.
Lori, okay. I also want to ask you about that because I read your list of reforms, and I know you've given a great deal of thought to this, more than anybody I can think of. And you talk about building community trust, and I think that's such an important piece here, that you have to restore trust between the community and police in order for this to work, the system. And you even said that community policing programs in the past, like CAPS, haven't really been given their due. They've been considered programs, and I think one of the things you said is it should be a core philosophy.
Yes. I think that's critically important. The superintendent has done a lot from day one that he's been on the job to talk about the importance of embracing the community, respectful engagement. But, you know, as I've said, and you referenced, that's got to be a core ethos of the department. The line police officers who are out there walking the beat every day, responding to 911 calls, we need to get to a place where they understand and recognize that partnership with the community is as important a tool for them as a gun and their badge. And we're not there yet, but that is the objective that we have to get to in order to really turn the tide in the relationship between the police and the communities that they serve and protect. We have to get to that place. And clearly, the community also has to take steps in the direction of the police. I understand that there's a lot of skepticism out there. There's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of anger. And some of it clearly is justified given the experiences that people have had. But we need the police. We need them to be able to do their job effectively. Of course, it has to be constitutional. Of course, there has to be respectful engagement. But it's a partnership. And a partnership doesn't work if only one side is trying. So both sides have to dig down deep, think about the ways in which they can create a safe space to engage with each other.
There's been a lot of talk, Lori, about, well, if the new administration is not really pushing for these kind of things, that maybe, you know, the mayor and the police department will back off a little bit since they don't have the threat of a federal investigation hanging over their head. It seems like that would not be the case, but I'll put it to you. How committed really is everybody in this transition?
Well, look, I can't look into people's hearts and minds. I think we just have to take people at their word. And let me say a couple things. One is what's happening with Washington. Even if you look at the cities that have signed a consent decree with the Department of Justice, the hard work of reform, the responsibility, and the burden always lies with the municipality. Now, clearly, the consent decree and the monitor or court oversight is added teeth to and really the stick, but the work has to be done by the local municipality. We've heard from the mayor now today in the press conference, in the last couple days in statements to the media. He has said, I am committed to moving forward. There is no U-turn. And I think we got to take him at his word. Obviously, you know, we have the trust with Verify. We need to make sure that there's accountability and that we are acting in our self-interest. We are pushing forward and digging down deep and making the reforms that need to be necessary. But the harm has to be done in Chicago, regardless of what happens in Washington. And frankly, another reason why that's critically important, we now have two reports in the last year that have shown deficiencies in the way in which we police in Chicago. If we do not make those changes, the very aggressive and active plaintiffs of the rights law who bring cases on behalf of individuals alleging police misconduct, they're going to attach both those reports as Exhibit A and B to their complaint, and they're going to say the city is deliberately indifferent, write me a check. Mm-hmm. So I hate to be that crass about it, but mm-hmm. we have a huge financial incentive as taxpayers mm-hmm. to make sure that these reforms are implemented in full as expeditiously as is possible, that we start to save the money that we've been spending in settlements and judgments.
Well, we all want this to succeed, and you're right, not just financially, but also because the civil rights and the rights of people who are living in neighborhoods where they're in fear for their life every day, and the relationships between police and communities, they have to succeed. That's good for all of us. And, Lori, I'm happy you're part of the, you know, implementing these reforms, because it's in good hands, I feel.
Let's hope. Lori, thank you for your time this afternoon. Good luck as things move forward. We appreciate it. All right, let's do this, and then there's more. But first, by let's do this, I mean we must talk to Violetta. Right, Violetta?
Okay. Yeah.
Because she gets mad, Anna, when I ignore her. She comes down, she gets very angry.
Wouldn't anyone?
Even more so, I think.
No, I don't know. Yeah, with me
it's
more
fine.
So.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
No, listen, I can be. I didn't forget you. It's time. Traffic Trouble Spots. You want the big intro? The whole deal? Here she is with the Traffic Trouble Spots. It's Violetta Padromedic.